Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
Hello and welcome along to a very special GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson, brought to you by AIB. Why is it so special? Why? Well, I'll tell you why it's a special GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson. Because there is no Colin Parkinson. I'm Conan Doherty, and that's right, you heard me correctly. Colin Parkinson is not here today. Tell your friends, tell every single dub that you know, Woolley's off and we're going to have a right laugh. So, to celebrate such a momentous occasion, that being Woolley's absence, we're going to make hay by trying to get as many Dublin players into the one show as possible in the 1 hour. So lads, if you're listening, please get on. We figure this is the only chance you're going to talk to us when Woolley's gone. So come on, we'll chat details, what you really think of him. It'll be great. We might even praise Jim Gavin along the way as well. Who knows? And I definitely will talk about Jamie Connolly for a bit in the show. We will not, however, talk about Leash for a good 17 and a half minutes as has become customary under the Woolley regime. And actually, the most important part of the show, I want you to text in or tweet in. We don't have a text. Why am I saying that? I want you to tweet in or Facebook us or whatever after the show and tell me exactly how many words of mine you can actually understand. Don't spare me, because let's face it, like him or not, Woolley has a lovely voice. It's very listenable. It's very concise. It's an all-round nice voice. And like, you know, I know he uses it a lot to speak nonsense with, but I can still listen to it, even though it annoys me a lot. Me, on the other hand, I seem to get a thicker Derry accent the more I stay in Dublin. I don't know what that's about. The only thing I got in Dublin is yeah, and Jesus, I went back to a wedding back home 2 weeks ago, and I said yeah, and they ripped the piss out of me. You're supposed to say aye in Derry, you're not supposed to say yeah, so I'll try and say aye a lot more for the lads listening up north. Anyway, I'm talking nonsense. We've got a great show coming up. I'll give Woolley credit where it's due. He's left us two cracking interviews. He's chatting with Frankie Dolan from St. Bridget's. They have the Connacht final this weekend. And he's got an absolutely brilliant debate coming up here with Monaghan legend Dick Clerkin. The two of them really go at it about Sky GAA. It's definitely worth a listen. With me in the studio today is Joe.ie's finest and Maximum Media's longest serving employee, Mr. Conor Heenahan. Connor is a Mayo man, so you know, I had to drag him away from Twitter while he's refreshing the pages to see if the lads have any more player statements coming out, just to make himself feel better. Connor, talk to me. Is there a curse or not?
It's funny actually, Conor. Like after the replay last year, or after replay this year, sorry. Some people apparently genuinely believed we were going to win it because first of all, it was on a Saturday. And then again, it was in October, and apparently the curse didn't apply to either Saturdays or October. It was just Sundays in September. That goes to show you how ridiculous the curse is, and how ridiculous some Mayo fans can be at times. But no, if we're cursed, we're cursed to be the second best team at a time of probably the greatest team of all time. But listen, there's as the player statements no doubt elaborated upon, there's plenty of life left in this Mayo team, and yeah, I'm confident we'll challenge again soon.
Written like a true player statement.
Thank you.
Speaking of choking, Connor's a proud Kilty man. He's one of those cornerbacks who likes to tell people he's a halfback. Isn't that right?
Probably right, yeah. Yeah.
And his team actually lost in the intermediate final to Lee Keegan's Westport and Mayo. And I'm not going to laugh at that, because my club back home lost the intermediate final and it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. It is. I've had about 3 weeks now and it's still... Still bothers me slightly, but not as much as it bothered me 3 weeks ago. But listen, I'm not gonna sit here and pretend that we deserve to win at Westport 1 by 6 points. And I don't mind saying that it should have been far more than that. It was a 6-point hammering if there ever was one. But no, they're a good team and they've just won Connacht. So all the best to them in the All-Ireland series.
Did you tweet about it or release an Instagram post?
I didn't. I actually couldn't face Twitter. I couldn't face Instagram, any social media. I barely read any reports about it afterwards. It hurt that much. But... Do you know, listen, no more like a Mayo fan. Time heals all wounds. So come next year, I'll be ready to go again.
Sure isn't time a great
healer? Sure isn't it.
Anyway, like, we'll talk more about Lee Keegan, because I'm interested to hear what he's like as a club player. Like,
he's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I'd say he is. Yeah. But we'll talk more about him later on in the show. Do you want to talk about another Mayo man? James Horan. Like, it seems that he's about to return to coaching, okay? At club level, let's get this right. At club level, as part of a backroom team in Galway for a hurling club.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the greatest managers of all, you know, well, not of all time, I can't say that. That's
definitely of the modern era, yeah.
Like, he's one of the best managers in Ireland right now, and he's going to be a coach under as a Barry Cullinan and Joe Hessian.
Yeah, and Barry Cullinan is a former Galway footballer as well. That's in potentially in the coaching setup of a Galway hurling club as well. And so
Turlochmore, if they're ratified on Sunday, then apparently, according to Mayo News, James Horan is going to be a coach for a hurling club in Galway.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard it, and when like my friends in Mayo heard it as well, we were as taken aback as anyone. You know, I expected James Horan to get back to coaching, you know, in the fairly near future, but not in Galway and not with a hurling club. But I suppose the thing is, he's been brought in terms of preparation, in terms of what he can do, like with strength and conditioning, etc. And I suppose the way I looked at it then is, like, if James Horan is available, well then, who wouldn't? What any sort of team, who wouldn't want to avail of kind of his expertise? Because I suppose, like, whatever he did with Mayo on the pitch, and whatever in terms of his influence on Mayo's playing style, whatever, I think the biggest impact, and absolutely still being felt today, is the culture that James Horan developed within Mayo since when he took over in 2011. So within, I'd say, 2 to 3 years, but definitely now 5 years on, you know, Mayo, along with a few other counties, are one of the standard bearers in terms of preparation, in terms of the standards they set. And it was absolutely James Horan that implemented that within Mayo. So, like, he's not going to be reinventing the wheel in terms of hurling tactics or anything like that, you know. Like, I can't see that. But in terms of what he might do for a club in terms of the culture, and in terms of preparing them to, like Turlochmore, I think, haven't won a senior title in Galway in over 30 years. But if he can make, you know, we constantly talk about, you know, the extra 2%, whatever. And if he can do that behind the scenes, and he can make them better prepared to take on, you know, the Portumnas, I think it was Thomas is the one, the Galway hurling this year. Well then, yeah, absolutely. Why not? Why would you not have him involved? And I suppose the interesting thing with Horan as well is that, you know, he ran a sporting excellence conference in Brafe earlier on this year as well, and he would have invited down the likes of Kenny Egan. I think there was a few high profile rugby people involved, you know, and he's constantly preaching the need to kind of to take what you can from other sports as well. And listen, I know hurling is within the GAA as well, but it's a completely different game. But like, why not lean on the expertise that Horan has obviously brought to the table in the last few years? So I'm really interested to see how it works out, to be honest.
Oh yeah, I fully understand why Turlochmore would have him in, of course. I'm just wondering why. Like, it's great in a way. It's like, what a proper GAA man. There was that, I think he was getting interviewed a couple of days after one of those All-Ireland finals he lost, I don't know which one. And he was talking about, you know, he's back with the club under eights the next day or a couple of days later, and I thought, geez, that's a proper man. I heard he was on with Ballintubber last year, like, just for a bit.
At the start of the year, kind of doing something similar. Yeah. But
what's he getting out of this going to a hurling club? Like, it's obviously they're getting a lot of benefits, but you know, surely he could do something better.
I'd know, is it to keep his eye in for like his eventual return to intercounty management, if that's what he sees, or is it a thing that, as I said, he's shown an interest in other sport as well, and it kind of, like, there's always kind of interest out there in somebody with a high performance background, and I think James Horan, absolutely, that's he deals in high performance. Like, and just going back to his influence of Ballintubber, like, going back to my previous intermediate final appearance, which is in 2007, show my age here, but we played James Horan's Ballintubber. James Horan was in charge at the time, and while we're still an intermediate club, Ballintubber went on to win. They went on to senior, obviously, after beating us by a point in 2007. And they went on to contest 4 finals, I think, and they won 3 of them. Now, James Horan wasn't in charge for all of them because he went to Mayo. But, like, in that time, they've established themselves as one of the big forces in Mayo. And, like, while, you know, you have to, like, the presence of Killian and Jimmer O'Connor, for example, and Alan Dillon has a lot to do with that. It's no accident as well that James Horan happened to be around as well. And now that, like, they have a very strong underage structure in Ballintubber as well, and then when they're coming into a senior setup, it's a setup that's been influenced by a culture that James Horan has put in place. So, I'd say that if Turlochmore do do get them on board, that they're going to really feel the benefits.
It's interesting you said about learning from different sports, and he's not going to reinvent the wheel and hurt him, but I heard a story, it's probably one of those nonsense stories, but it's great nonetheless, about Jim McGuinness taking one of the Celtic youth teams, and you know the way he's been, like, apparently he's been courted as the next Celtic manager for the last three Celtic managers, but like I heard he's working on a kick-out strategy in soccer to try and score from it. So if only he can get Stephen Cluxton across now, then who knows? But that actually brings me, that's a completely accidental link, but it brings me to the GAA confirming that the mark will be introduced across all levels of Gaelic football come January 1st.
Yeah,
I'm reading off my notes here. So Congress was not a bad dream. This is actually happening. The rule states, when a player catches the ball cleanly from a kick-out without it touching the ground, on or past the 45-metre line nearest the kick-out point, he shall be awarded a mark by the referee. The player awarded a mark shall have the options of A, taking a free kick, or B, playing on immediately. I mean, I wrote a piece about this 8 months ago when it came into Congress, and I just don't get the point. Like, it seems that it's change for the sake of change. Michael Darren-McCauley came out at the time, and he tweeted saying, "Dear GAA, stop messing with the rules. Kind regards, everyone." And this is one of the best midfielders in the game, because he's a former Footballer of the Year.
Not a traditional high. He's a good. He's a decent high fielder. He's not a traditional high fielder in the bowl of a Darragh O'Shea, for example. But he has a point.
Just nonsense as well, that you know it's going to protect the art of high fielding. It's not like you can win a mark by getting the ball into your chest, by running onto it, and it seems like they're trying to stop a short kick out, which it's actually just going to encourage you to play short more. If you're playing against a team superior to you in the middle of the field, and you're risking giving them a free kick 45 metres out from your own goal, or definitely in your own half, anyway, you'll go short more. And what it will also do is encourage you to be more defensive. If I'm managing a team and I'm a little bit concerned about them winning a free kick 50 metres out, I don't want them to have a complete look at the pitch and just being able to pick off your forward. So you'll probably sit one man back and prepare, sort of take it from there, like, you know, make sure you don't get caught out with a free kick that the referee is going to award for a high catch or a catch in the chest.
Yeah, I'm not in the habit of praising your articles, Conan, you probably know that, but I was kind of weighing it up, and I was trying to think of the positive aspects of the mark, and I was thinking of your traditional fielders, and even there's a lot of them in the game today, like David Moran, for example, and Mayo have a couple, James O'Shea and Tom Barton as well, would like to. They'd be in the mould of traditional fielders. Yeah, they're modern midfielders as well, in terms of their engines are crazy. But then I thought about it, and it's more on the defensive aspect of the kickout. So if you're taking a kickout and you're thinking, like, I thought initially that, like, it might encourage keepers to do, let's say, like Mayo encouraged Rob Henley to do this year for the replay. It didn't really work out, but to go longer. But not only are you facing the risk of conceding possession, you're facing the risk of conceding a free kick in a scorable area as well. You know, so like I think a lot of managers have an instinct to be naturally defensive, and I think the managers with that kind of mindset would be thinking, well, then why in the hell would we put a contestable kick out there if not only will we concede possession, but could be conceding the score as well. So, like, and it's interesting as well, like, feedback from the players. I was just reading Sean Kavanagh there, and he would have a lot of experience of the Mark Say playing international rules. And again, he plays for a Tyrone team that, you know, wouldn't be full of traditional high fielders. But anyway, and he thinks that, well, obviously, it's going to, no more than Tyrone did to initially spoil high fielding teams, it's going to lead to a lot more breaking of the ball.
Yeah.
And he pointed out as well that, like, you're more likely, you'd nearly, you know, you're just more likely to adopt a more defensive mindset because of it. So if he's saying that, and a very good point he made as well is about the interpretation. So, like, we harp on all day about the interpretation of the black card. So you have the option of taking a free kick or kind of playing on, but I think that's more easily implementable in international rules. International rules tends to be more fluid, I think, and you're allowed to mark all over the place.
Yeah.
But I think there might be a midfielder who, like, you know, he comes up and he wins a high ball, and then decides he wants to play on, and then 2 seconds later, like, oh shit, there's nothing on. Give me that free kick, and he's looking at the ref, and the ref is probably like, no, you made your bed, so go with it. Like, so, and like Sean Kavanagh was saying, like, it's just kind of you're adding to, you know, an already long list of responsibilities for a referee, and nearly saying that you're going to need two referees to implement this. So, listen, we constantly give out about the GAA and their reluctance to embrace change, and now that they're, you know, kind of introducing a rule that we're hammering it already. So maybe we should wait and see. But I can just envisage debates being had like this, and like if the black card is still going to be in play as well, like the Sunday game of a Sunday evening is just going to be an hour long discussing like we need to get rid of the Merc and then we need to get rid of the black card. So yeah, wait and see. But I have my doubts.
I mean, the idea that it's going to speed up the game is laughable for a start. It stops the game, it gives you a free kick, and no way are you going to let a midfielder the option to run if he catches the ball. You're going to just get in his way no matter what. You're not going to let him take it quickly. It's going to be deliberately stopped, and the referee cannot police that. He's just going to wait till everyone gets out of the way. That stays the game stopped. Everyone's back. I mean, Cluxton, I think Barry Cahill told us in the summer that he was under instructions to get the ball out within 6 seconds. That was his only, like, there was no major plan. Just get the ball out within 6 seconds, and that's speed. And that's the game starting straight away. I mean, this idea of you're going to give a free kick in the middle of the field is not going to speed it up.
But you made a good point as well earlier on in that, like, it's not necessarily reviving the lost art of high fielding, because especially with keepers like Cluxton around, and so let's say Evan Comerford for Tipperary this year as well, they can ping a ball 45 yards to a guy running onto a ball who's going to probably take it in the chest, and he's going to take it uncontested because he's made such an effort to get 5 yards away from his marker. It's not as if there's not that many contests now, like traditional contests, where two fielders or maybe three or four fielders are going to go up all with the intention of claiming. Like I still think that's sometimes great to see, and you probably see it sometimes more so at club level, whatever. But you're rarely going to see that in intercounty where 2 to 4 midfielders are going to go up all with the intention of catching the ball and then let the best man win. It just rarely happens. So maybe they're bringing this rule in 10 years too late. I'm not sure, but I'd have my doubts.
Up next, Willie spoke to Monaghan's Dick Clerkin, and it got a bit heated. But Connor, can I ask you something first?
Yep.
Do you know that little dink pass into a crowded area?
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it 3 times.
It's in around you. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, delighted to say recently retired Monaghan great Dick Clerkin is on the line making your GAR debut. How's it going, Dick?
Evening, Wooly, how are you? Privileged to be joining you.
Thanks very much. How does this all work, Dick, in the weeks after you retire? Is Dick Clerkin has left the WhatsApp group, you're banned off the Facebook page? How does it all work?
That's it, yeah. Sort of a protocol, I suppose, that you sort of figure out for yourself. Nobody hands you a template of what to do, but you sort of realise that, actually, I shouldn't be on that WhatsApp group, and you're not getting the texts and all the rest. That gradually sort of phases itself out, and you start referring to yourself as, or people refer to you as an ex-footballer and all the rest. But yeah, it's strange, like, you're not sort of prepared for it, and haven't been sort of used to it for so long. Like, it's like an awful lot of things that it's all a bit of a change. But it's different, I suppose, this time of year, Colin, because you're used to doing nothing anyway. Like November into December, typically your downtime, so it's not that big of a change to the system. It'll be more when, you know, the boys are back training and you're sort of driving past them. Because I'll drive past the changing, you know, the training grounds every day now, coming home from work, and you could be looking across and boys are heading out in the field. I'd say that the first day you see that, that'll probably be a wee bit of a will be tough enough. But listen, that's all part of it.
Yeah, because you've moved back. You're living in Monaghan now. You were in Meath, weren't you? It's probably more difficult to still be in Monaghan and retire.
A wee bit, yeah. It is, I suppose, you're that bit closer. But equally, when I was away, I was in Trim for a few years, and then we were in Drogheda. We've sort of been around there for the last sort of 4 or 5 years. But now, since the last 2 years, we've been back in Monaghan. It was great when you were at home with all the excitement of Ulster finals and successes to be at home and not be away from home from it. But I suppose now that you're at home and you're not part of it, you'll be sort of seeing it straight up. But listen, I'm sort of setting myself up and really looking forward forward to, as the man says, becoming a fan and a supporter and actually going and enjoying the games. Yet some people do say that who have retired in different sports, that first year it can be tricky to do that. So, but you'll only know that once you're actually, you're sort of faced with going to games and watching and sort of wondering, God, could I still be there type thing. But I'm hoping that I'll be sort of, you know, jumping into it and looking forward to going to watch games and support the lads with my own two boys, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I found the first year difficult before you can properly be a fan, but you know, maybe it's different for everyone. Well, it was a sad end really, Dick, because your piece in the Examiner was excellent and it painted a picture of you warming up on the sideline, and it just shows what a business it is. There's no sentiment in GAA. Malachy would have known it was your last chance and the game was slipping away. Your son is mimicking your warm up, you know, and you don't get on. It's like a bit of a sad way to end it all.
Possibly, but equally, it probably makes it easier to make that final decision as well. That, you know, that as the man says, the end is nigh. You don't have to be sort of battling over the if buts and maybes that you might have if you were sort of finishing up as a player, and that you still sort of realise that, you know, it might be the time to quit. So, like, it made the decision, which it is the right decision, to finish up quite easy. At the time, yeah, of course it was tough. You know, yourself as a player, all you want to do is play. You know, that's what you're there for. You're not there to be a spectator. You know, all the talk about, you know, contributing to training and sort of that voice and experience, that's grand, but, you know, you want to be a player first and foremost. When that bit by bit is slowly taken away from you, which will happen, everybody, as if you stay long enough, it's always going to be tough. And I suppose one thing I sort of said to myself over the last sort of couple of years, when you sort of knew that, you know, the body was starting to slow down and you were eventually going to have to hang them up, that I would have preferred to have been gone before the day came that you were on the bench and you weren't taken off it. Because that was the first time. Yeah. You know, the Donegal game before was the first time that I'd ever not played in a championship game in 17 years. You know, every game, either a starter or that you've been involved in, never missed one through injury. So that was sort of, yeah, God, I wish that wasn't on the CV. But listen, that's, you know, you can't look back with regrets and that stuff like that. That's sometimes the way it happens, and so be it, you know, and I have no real issue with it either.
Yeah, so it's kind of stay playing until you're not needed anymore, and that's kind of the way you look at it. The one thing I was interested, Dick, was because we spoke about you here on not last week's show, the show before, and we're talking about the evolution of Dick Clerkin as a footballer, and you've gone from this enforcer, you know, hardy midfielder who's going to do a job marking someone, to a footballer who can get forward and kick scores. And I was reading quotes from you since, like, you actually took freeze at one stage when Banty took over Monaghan, you know. But like, first impressions when you burst onto the scene would be as this kind of enforcer, you know, hard hitting midfielder.
Yeah, so listen, really, for myself and a lot of the Monaghan players, is only really from, say, well, probably from 07 onwards. Like, yes, we sort of popped our heads up in 05. We sort of won that National League and got to the last 12 against Tyrone. But really, you know, until you're actually getting the provincial finals and you're really on the scene, you know, let's call a spade, nobody takes that much notice. So it was really from 07 onwards, and at that stage, yeah, we sort of had developed sort of into a sort of quite intense physical team, and sort of felt we had to play that way to compete, because, you know, we just had to look around us in Ulster with the quality of, say, Tyrone and Armagh and Donegal. For Manor, like, most of the counties were actually operating at a very high level. So to get up to that, we sort of had to bring something different to the table just to be competitive. But where I started my career, you know, I was a forward. I played my first championship game for Manor was a full forward. I would have always been a sort of a scoring, free-taking forward type player for my club. And, you know, so that's the first year with Banty. I sort of had a good club year taking the freeze in that previously. So we sort of said, well, here's a guy, a good free-taker. And I had the freeze for the National League that year, and on the first game of the championship, I had a bad day, like a lot of free takers. You get a bad day, somebody else gets a go. If he doesn't, you lose it. And I suppose when you're as a midfielder, it's always going to be difficult to hold on to that. But I would have taken freeze, and I've been fairly free scoring for the club all my career. But I suppose the role I played for Monaghan wouldn't have reflected that for a large part of it. But as you say, thankfully, the last few years I got back into playing more of what I would say my natural game, which was a wee bit more creative and added a few more scores.
Was that frustrating then, that people would have the opinion of you as being a player that you knew you weren't?
A little bit, but I suppose it's what we bought into. I accepted that. I had no regrets. I feel it's what, you know, I added a lot to the team, and you know, it's a collective. But yeah, it did after a wee while that I suppose I was getting too much possible negative press, and certainly parents and family wouldn't have enjoyed the sort of the references. And I suppose there was that game in against Derry in Celtic Park in 2009 that we got an awful lot of bad press, and myself personally did. And I suppose I said then, I said, you know, there's two things to sort of take from it. Yeah, it's only getting us so far, and you know, I'm not enjoying it as much as maybe I could if I played differently. I suppose from then onwards, I sort of went back to, you know, playing my own type of game, and not getting too tied up in sort of the physical and trying to totally grind your opponent down to the sacrifice of your own game. Always would have made a point of, you know, have as much a man to mark here as do my own game, and I think I would have largely balanced that quite well. But I suppose I would have moved away from, how would you say, some of the darker arts that we would have played out in those early years.
Yeah, it is actually very difficult when you have in your head that I'm going to ruffle this fella up, or I'm going to, you know, get him off his game, to actually ever play football yourself, because you can't. You said you had the balance right. I found in my game towards the end, if I ever tried that old nonsense, I couldn't actually focus on what I was good at all. You became obsessed with the other stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I sort of look back like at a very simple stat that sort of gives you a good idea. From 2007, 2008 and 2009, I never scored once in Championship football for Monaghan.
Right.
You know, and that would have been, I would have went all previous years and years since, would have, there wouldn't have been two, I think I averaged maybe a point or two every game or something like that. You know, I would have always been chipping in, but like I had, as you said, possibly I just got so caught up in sort of that aggressive defensive type game, you never were contributing in an offensive sense. And yeah, you're right, and possibly that was because you were so tied up in doing that job, which you signed up to. And I say, I don't have any real regrets about it, because we felt that's what was needed at the time. But as you say, it has to take away elsewhere, and possibly, you know, that showed up in how I was sort of contributing on the scoreboard or not, as it was the case.
You said in your Examiner piece that I've witnessed a remarkable transformation in the psyche of Monaghan football during my career. So you really have, you know, come full circle from struggling to success. Who's responsible for that transformation in the psyche of Monaghan football?
I think it'd be very unfair to any one individual to lay it on somebody, because you'd be taken away from what other people give. Like, it really, and it's not to wax lyrical, it really was a collective. Like, but there was definitely groups of players and individuals that he had key roles, you know, going back to even the likes of Seamus McEnany, when he sort of came in, and that drive and passion to sort of bring, you know, wanting to bring Monaghan on. There was then that collective sort of group of players that it would have been myself and Owen Lennon, Paul Finlay, Vinnie, Corey, Desi, that sort of strong core that sort of maintained that drive from, say, 05 right up until now. And then the other leaders that have come in the likes of Darren Hughes, Colin Walsh. So there's a lot of strong leadership characters that sort of stuck the distance, you know, that didn't sort of have a good few years. You know, you see in a lot of counties, especially in the small counties, you'll see lads that, yeah, they'll be there for a few years, they might slip away and, you know, might retire early. We didn't have that. We always had Monaghan, in fairness. You always had the best players available playing and putting their name forward, even in the good days and the bad. And that was a massive thing. Just that consistent collective perseverance, because with small resources, some years the cards just aren't going to fall your way. You don't get the rub of the green in the game, you're out, gone, you know. But, you know, you can't throw the hat at it after that. You had to keep going back the next year. And thankfully we did. And it was a collective thing. And then bit by bit you got the support from, say, your county board in terms of resources and sponsors coming on board. And bit by bit it starts to grow and a good solid fan base. The next thing you have what you have now, you have a really good thriving structure, good support systems, good investment. And we don't overspend in Monaghan, you know, but we think we could give return and give an awful lot back for what is pumped in by sponsors and supporters. So a really good, healthy culture that has developed over the sort of the last 10, 50 years, with an awful lot of people from every aspect has contributed. Certainly couldn't put it down to one person.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Because you were, I suppose, you were very competitive before Malachy O'Rourke came. It's just you were coming up maybe against the Tyrone team that were, you know, almost unbeatable in finals, especially, and in replays and things like that. It wasn't so much that you changed, so much more that that Tyrone team went away and you formed a new rivalry with Donegal.
There was a bit of that, I suppose. Like, and really, we would have felt, and a lot of people would even say, and I was still on that team that we had here from the Ulster final in 2007 and pushed Kerry hard and up to, were as good, if not better, than the current team.
It was, yeah.
You know, and very, very fine margins. And we knew that, you know, as you say, that, like, that phenomenally good Tyrone team, we weren't that far away from them. Equally, that Kerry team that just nipped us. Like, they're two, probably argue, of the best teams over the last 20, 30 years, and we were very close to them. So we knew we were very good. Those teams were just that bit better. But it was a case of, like, if we keep being very good, some years, some teams aren't going to be as good, and then we'll be standing up different trophies. And that's what happened. But you have to be persistent. You have to keep yourself up there. You can't do, like you see an awful lot of smaller counties do, have your few years, next thing you don't get anything out of it, and next thing you fall back too far again, that you're not there. So when the opportunity arises, you're not there to grasp it. We managed to keep ourselves up there. So when the opportunity did arrive, as you say, Tyrone took the step off, Donegal maybe took a step off. Doesn't matter. That's what happens. You know, but you got to be there to take advantage of it. You know, every team has a bad year. Every team has a bad game. If you're not there to take advantage of it, well, it's your loss.
Yeah, exactly. And you definitely took advantage of Donegal that day in the Ulster final. It was almost unbeatable, Donegal team, people thought at that time. You don't think you got as much credit for winning that year as he should have. When you look at it, it's maybe understandable enough, because he hadn't won one, and people put it down more to an off day by Donegal rather than a brilliant performance by you boys.
I suppose if it had been a case that you pipped them at the death or whatever, and it was a case of, you know, it was a sort of a nip-tuck type game and you got a free glass score, yeah, you might say you were lucky. We dominated that game from the minute it was thrown in to the end. Okay, that's not an off day. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like, even, you know, and it was so comprehensive, and it was an Ulster final. Donegal hadn't been going poorly. You know, you go back to the rhetoric of Donegal and Jim McGuinness prior to that game. It was all about, we're going where, we're happy with where we're at. There was no complaints. There was no flagging. God, we're tired. We're there for the picking. They were thinking All Ireland's. They were pushing on. So, like, it wasn't a case of a Donegal team that were battered and bruised and tired. Everything was fine and rosy in their camp. We were just a better team. We were, and I still think we are a better team than Donegal, and we have proven that in head-to-heads over the last couple of years. You know, and because maybe we didn't win All Ireland's, or we didn't do what Donegal were able to do at Croke Park, it was easy to sort of dismiss it as, look, doesn't matter, we beat them off enough to prove it wasn't luck, we were just the better team. And that was proven out in the year since, in terms of we had the upper hand more often than not in one-to-ones.
Did you have the upper hand in one-to-ones, or is it?
No, we had, if you look at league games, league finals,
we
three Ulster finals, we won two, they won one. Yes, last year in the semi-finals, they sort of leveled the stakes in the semi-final. We beat them in the league final.
Yeah.
We beat them in the league last year. We beat them in league up in Ballybuffet. So, no, the numbers are very much in our favour.
Yeah,
so,
well,
they can't be disputed.
It's very close. It's very close. I'll give you... you're
not more, actually. In
championship is very close, you'd have to say.
I think the last three league encounters, we won the three of them.
Suppose now it's the co-commentary with Sky will keep you busy and keep you involved in the game. And that's something I wanted to talk to you about as well, Dick, before we let you go, because we had Paul Rouse here 3 or 4 weeks ago talking about the GAA's decision to go with Sky again, renew that deal for like 5 years this time instead of three. And I know you're a big defender of Sky getting the rights to the games, but it's very hard to defend their numbers though, Dick.
I suppose, okay, I defended Sky at the very offset, before I had any involvement with them. Okay, so yes, I worked with them last year. It'd be easy to say that you're sort of conflicted and compromised. At a very simple level, I think that a lot of the arguments, Colin, that have been put forward as an excuse that Sky shouldn't be there, don't really stack up. You know, who cares other than Sky who's watching them? as I say, that's people's choices. Do you know what I mean? It's almost as if you have to wave this flag. It's a commercial decision for Sky, as it is for RT or BBC or any of these channels, to put on programmes if the numbers watch. That's for the people in Sky to determine if the numbers coming in make it viable to work. If they deem how many few that people keep rolling out is enough, well, then so be it. Okay. Personally, I think it's an excellent product. I think it's a great product. I think you'll find with an awful lot of products, not just from a media point of view, you look at it takes a little while to get that trust and relationship with the reviewers.
Yeah,
you know,
had,
you think of anything. That always starts at the bottom. You don't come in and hit 500,000 views. That just doesn't happen, and nobody expects that. You come in at the ground, you build up market share, you get that bit of trust and familiarity. And so Sky is still on that journey. People, simple things, Colin, and I'll be honest with you, we all talk about it in Sky. There's that bit of familiarity as well, that people like to hear the traditional RTE commentators on their games versus the new voices. That familiarity is a huge Irish thing. People like to stick with what they know. But yet I would argue that the product that Sky deliver is much superior in other ways than RTE. But again, it's tit for tat. You know, RTE deliver excellent product, but so do Sky. So I think people should actually sit and look at what has been offered here. Is this a good product? Is this something that actually adds good value to the game and the GAA? And judge it on that basis,
but then we
can have an honest conversation about it.
The only thing about that, Dick, is that people are not watching it. You know, you had Mayo this year. They had 5 of their 6 games on Sky. People don't have Sky in Ireland. Like, I think 37,000 are averaging, you know, with a big qualifier hurling game with Clare and Cork. People don't have Sky. If it's not on free-to-air, people can't see it. And we see things like golf moving from BBC to Sky and participation numbers are falling because people can't see the games. Like, you have 2 young fellas at home. You know, when you're younger, you watch a game on TV, you go out the back, you practice. Families in Ireland are not watching the game on Sky. You know, young people are not able to see these games. And, like, that's not going to help participation rates. You know, so why they would pick Sky over TV3, for example, I can understand the experiment 3 years ago. I was like you, I was for it. But when nobody's watching it, when their numbers are so bad, why give it to a pay-per-view channel over a free-to-air channel?
Okay, well, I'll take that argument, Colm. I'll ask you this question. So say over the last 20 or 30 years, do you think interest and participation levels pre-Sky, so we'll cut it off before Sky and pay-per-view came on the scene, do you think, yes or no, participation levels in GAA increased or decreased over the years?
Increased,
okay. And why is that? Is that because the games have become more popular, or because more people could see them on TV, or for more people were going to watch them? Because 20 or 30 years ago, there was nothing to see on TV. The only way you could actually go and watch the games was going to watch the games. And there was no problem back then. There was no people shouting that we have to have people showing our games to increase participation, increase the market. There was no problems back then. You know, people are honing in on the games now that Sky are covering. 20, 30 years ago, not even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, these games weren't being covered at all.
But when there's
nobody
the
was banging down the door.
It's
more a case of now Sky are covering games that 5 years ago would never have been covered. And now seemingly it's a problem just because, or is the argument that RTE don't have them, or is that Sky is covering them? And maybe that's the argument people are saying. RTE aren't covering them versus Sky are. And I think that, if most people have been honest, that's the argument that they're trying to make.
No, because I think RTE have the same amount of games. I think the argument is that TV3, another free-to-air channel, were in at the same time as Sky. And the GAA said the Sky didn't offer much more money. But the argument at the time was that Sky could bring the GAA to an international audience. The numbers are not reflecting that. Nobody's watching in England. The service was already there on premium sports for a tenner. Now it's 30 for Sky Sports. That idea is nonsense.
No, hold on. Let's call a spade on that one. That one was knocked around here a couple of weeks ago. Premium sports. How do you watch premium sports for a tenner? How do you watch premium sports? You can only watch premium sports via a Sky box. You have to have a Sky subscription and add premium sports to it. I can't go bring up premium sports and get it on my own terrestrial TV. Can't do that. So that is a totally...
Okay, no, but
to put that argument out, say, so premium sports, don't want to hear it. You can't get it unless you're paying your 30, 40 euro a month for Sky on top of it.
Okay,
it's an add-on to Sky.
And
so that was a total bums the euro by that argument.
No,
I
no,
check that out.
Right, I'll just counter that by saying you can subscribe online. Number one,
we're not talking about online. Well, I can watch anything for free online.
And that's
okay. Talking about terrestrial TV.
Yeah.
Okay, you're talking about people in their boxes watching a TV set.
Yeah,
this is the argument. You can't talk about online.
You could get a Sky Basic package, okay, for maybe 25 per month. I used to have it. If you have that Sky Basic package for 25 per month, you can get premium sports. That's Sky being a service provider for you. Sky Sports is a completely separate thing, which is an extra 30. So you're actually getting a Sky Basic package, having to throw an extra 30 on it for Sky Sports, where you actually could have got a Sky Basic package and thrown an extra 10 on it for premium sports. So you're still down £20 in England. So like, it does, that argument does 100% stack up. You're mixing up.
But you're adding in that it's okay, you're actually bearing the argument to have a subscription-based service. I'm not too sure whether it's either free-to-air or a subscription is okay. So you're, now you're adding it's okay to have a subscription once it's not that expensive.
No, but you're...
You're adding in a cost element to it versus not having it. Like, we have to be consistent. And this is what I'm going back to my earlier point.
People are not being consistent
with their argument. It's either free-to-air or subscription-based. If you're down to a few euro at the end of it, I don't really think that comes into it.
But I think you're mixing up Sky as being a TV service provider, and you're mixing that up with Sky Sports, where the GAA has now put, you know, have put, a lot of people have a Sky Basic package just as a service provider, which is not really expensive for all your channels. That's not a big deal. That's for all your channels. The actual GAA going on to Sky Sports is an extra 30 on top of that. You know, so that's
actually not. If you actually, and that's why I have bought it over the last couple of summers, you can get reduced rate Sky Sports for 6 months that covers all your GAA coverage at half of that. And that's what I have done for the last 2 years. So it's not 30 euro a month, your subscription. I think it was an extra 15 or 16 euros. So now we're getting very close to get the GAA games equivalent to your premium sports. You're down to now, I think it was about 15, could be 16 euros versus your 10.
Yeah, but
so you're now arguing over 6 euro cost.
Yeah, no, but we're arguing about the GAA saying that this is being... The reason we're going with Sky is to open up to at the English audience, this massive audience, when it was already there.
So again, as I say, it was via a Sky based subscription service.
Yes,
so
but
like,
it was already there, but that's the principle of the matter.
So therefore you haven't moved from one to the other, you've stayed where it was. So if it wasn't a problem then, why is it a problem now?
No, but the principle of the matter is that it was already there. So that was an untruth told by the GAA that we're bringing this to a new audience.
But again, we haven't changed. So why if it wasn't a problem then, why is it a problem now? That's what I'm saying. We haven't changed by your argument. It's always been there on a subscription basis. So why is it an issue now?
Why
was nobody jumping up and down when Premium Sports had it for 10 years ago, that there was no outlet, that RTE or some equivalent in this country wasn't providing free-to-air to an international argument that Premium Sports were hogging?
Why was nobody
jumping up and down now? They're only jumping up and down now because it's Sky tagged to it, not Premium Sports. But it actually is the same reality.
Dick, because this is the reason. That English audience is only one leg of the argument. That was just an untruth the GAA told. That's one part of it. The other part of it is families in Ireland are unable to see the games, which is probably the biggest part of it, they're unable to see the games. Nobody's watching Sky in Ireland. Forget about their product. Nobody's watching it. So why have it on a pay-per-view when nobody's watching? The numbers are there in black and white when you can have it on a free-to-air like TV3. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I suppose there's another element to this argument, and Pádraig Duffy was very succinct when he was asked about this at the very start of the GAA. People can always watch the games when they go to the games, as they have done for years. People now, and I think it ties into an awful lot of current pop culture, if you want to call it that, kind of people sort of this expectation that it's all, everything is free and everything is there for when I want it. And I would ask the question in terms of, well, who is the GAA obliged to service? Because we know, like, for the hundreds and millions that are quoted in watching games, there's a huge proportion, and I know them, we all know them, we live amongst them every day, of guys who watch, they'll sit and they'll watch the game because it's there free to air. They'll have it on in the background, and that's one of those numbers. But we know the people, they don't go to club games, they don't contribute zero to the GAA. An awful lot of that as a percentage of that viewership. We live and breathe amongst them every day and you have conversations. Did you know they've never stood at a club game or anything? Are these the people that we have to now are forced to cater for just so they can sit and watch
Dick,
it in their,
can't,
in their Sunday
Dick,
evening?
You
as
can't
opposed
use
to,
them as an example.
Go to watch the game. Go to watch the game.
But there's genuine club people.
We're seeing now, we're seeing a drop in attendances. And there's a strong argument now that one of the reasons, potentially, people are trying to lay it at the door of the fall off in the quality of the games. I don't believe that. I believe there's a possibly an argument to be made for there's too many games on TV. It's got too easy for people to sit at home and watch games free to air. So you could easily make an argument with the stats in front of you now, by numbers, which are people are trying to do for the Sky argument, numbers in front of them, waving numbers. I'll wave numbers at you. There's nearly too many games free to air because you know what? People now are stopping going to games. They're stopping paying into games because that money goes directly to grassroots. The guy that sits at home in his armchair flicking it on, flicking between Sky Sports and the Premiership and the GAA and the RTE, he's contributing zero to the association.
The only thing is the free to air matches have stayed consistent over the last 10 years. So I mean they've stayed consistent. So you can't kind of associate fall in attendances with free to air when they've remained the same. It must be other factors that are affecting attendances.
I'll be honest, I can't comment on that. I haven't seen the trend in viewerships per game over the years. I haven't seen that. I would be. It depends what way you balance it. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on that. All we do know is less people are now going to watch games.
Yeah, so I don't think you can attribute that to free-to-air. I would attribute that maybe to rising ticket prices, the recession, the quality of football. There's lots of different factors that you could attribute.
The price of a GAA game, I would argue, is the best value you will get out there compared to what you're asked to pay into rugby games, League of Ireland, even going to the cinema. You're asked to pay maybe a tenner a couple of times a year for what people go to watch games. I think it's great value. I think that's a typically Irish argument. You know, people almost expect to get into GAA games for free, no matter what they're charged.
I'm just saying there's other factors.
They actually will go to a game over the course of the year, but yet you'd think nothing of rolling £130 to go see Coldplay. But yeah, you turn your nose up at paying €15 in to watch your county play a couple of times a summer.
I'm just throwing that out as another factor because I don't think free to air you can lay the blame.
I'm saying there's a strong argument can be made. I'm not laying the blame at it, but equally it's a numbers game. People are heisting numbers if it's Sky up for their arguments. You could equally start heisting numbers about other things, argue that free to air could potentially be impacting on the reduction of people actually going to games.
Yeah, I would instead
it's,
of...
It's an argument. I'm not saying it's one way or the other.
Yeah. Instead of strong argument, I would say weak argument. But we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Absolutely.
Because we've gone...
That's all about healthy debate.
Exactly.
What I would ask people to do on the whole Sky thing is judge it on its product. I says it's a product, it's been offered, and I can honestly tell you from working with the people in Sky, you have so many good, genuine GAA people behind the scenes there, and all they're interested to do is delivering a good product to meet what and match the integrity of the games that it should be.
Okay,
and I think,
just,
if people judge
that,
it on its merits, you know, they can't have too many complaints.
Just that, I was just going to let you go there, but I'm just going to have to pick you up on that. Genuine GAA people, their two main presenters are not genuine GAA people, and I think they stifle the debate and they struggle in a GAA setting. I don't think they're believable as GAA people because they're not GAA people, and good genuine debate and good healthy debate cannot be chaired by someone who doesn't really have any sort of basic base knowledge of the game.
I think that's a very, for a man in the media profession, I think that's a very harsh comment. Does that mean that you're not placed to discuss about soccer, golf, rugby because you haven't played the game? I'm quite sure you probably discuss and like to feel that you can sit and discuss and share conversations on those. I think that's quite a harsh comment on those people who have immersed themselves professionally in trying to present them games and learn. So who's to say after 5 years been immersed in the game, they can't call themselves experts in the game as much as anybody. Yes, they mightn't have come up through the ranks from playing underage football, but I think they're professionals first and foremost, and absolutely they're just trying to commit to do a very good job. And I think it's a wee bit of a harsh comment, because all I know is all they want to try and do is do a good game for the viewers that are watching.
Yeah, no, okay, if you find it harsh, fair enough. It's just, I don't mean you can't learn, I mean I don't see them doing it. I don't see good debate being shared.
I suppose that's an objective statement.
Yeah, maybe it is. Anyways, like I said, we'll agree to disagree. Dick, thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother, will you? Take care.
All right, up next, we'll talk to Frankie Dolan. All right, delighted to say St. Bridget's co-manager and still a current player, Frankie Dolan, joins me on the line now. Frankie, how's it going?
Great, Willie. How are you?
All good. Nice to be back in a Connacht final.
Yes, it's great for the club. I suppose, looking back at last year, if you were told last year you'd be, after losing the county semi-final, you'd be back in the club final next year, you'd be probably laughed out of Kiltoom. So it's great to be back and playing probably, I think it's the favourites for All-Ireland Cora Finn along with St. Vincent. So it's a massive, massive game for us coming up next week.
I saw those comments actually. You said the same thing after you won the semi-final, that you'd be laughed out of it in Kiltoom. Why would you be laughed out of it, Frankie? Like, I mean, you were in the Connacht final the year before, you're in All-Ireland Champions 2012. Things hadn't gone downhill that fast, surely.
Well, I suppose from our own point of view, we were beaten in the semi-final, Wooly, last year against our nearest and dearest rivals, Clannagale. We were going for five in a row, and it was the team were rock bottom after that. They were very disappointed with the way the year finished with us in the championship. I know we won the league a few weeks after that, but that meant absolutely nothing to us at all. We were going home and winning a championship, and to lose our championship in our own home ground was heartbreaking. So it took an awful lot of effort and work from the players, and I suppose the management and the club as a whole, to get these lads back and motivated for this year. And thankfully they bought into everything we've put in front of them, and the hard work paid off in the end, and we got over the line against Shane Curran's Parry Pierces. And that game, it was nearly into injury time before we got a couple of goals to kill the game off. So that's the fine margins. But like as I said, last year was a disaster for us, semi-final knockout, because we're used to winning championships. So we're back this year, and we're probably a bit rejuvenated, and we've that hunger back. So we'll need all of that the next day against Cora Finn to have any chance of beating them.
Yeah, was there a feeling around the club when you lost the semi-final that was the end of this team and it was about to break up? You know, it had come to the end of the road.
Well, there's no doubt about it. That's what it was. And coming from players that would have been only finished playing a year or two before that, and managers and selectors who you'd be chatting to on and off, I said that's probably the end of this great Bridges team. So we brought in a lot of young lads this year. I knew myself, we had a couple of young lads coming up through the underage. So we needed to, I knew myself when I got the job that I needed to freshen things up. And the young lads have brought a new lease of life to the older guys. And the dressing room is buzzing now this year. It's a brilliant dressing room. And everybody is enjoying their football again. That was the main thing that we wanted to bring in, the enjoyment back into it. And thankfully, so far, it's gone very well. And we're in the final. So
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's really all down to the players. So they bought into it, and all the hard work they've done since last January has paid off. We won the county final, so we're in bonus territory now, Willie. So we'll give it a shot against Cora Finn, and we don't know where we are at the moment, because we had an easy enough win against Aughawillan. So we don't really know where we are at the moment. We've a lot of injuries. Janine Cabride won't be available. So all of that stuff might come back to bite us against an incredible Cora Finn team.
Wait, was it an ambition of yours, Frankie, to go into management, or has this come a little bit sooner than you had expected?
Well, to be honest, Willie, I was with the Roscommon under-21 set up there for the last 2 years as well. So this is my third year involved with management or as a selector with a team. So it was nothing new to me. I had a good idea of what I was getting involved with the 2 years of the Roscommon under-21 has done me good. So I wasn't going in totally raw. Plus, I had Eddie Lohan coming in alongside me, who was involved with the county setup as well there for a few years before that. They got to a few under-21 finals, and unfortunately didn't win them. But he's been a great help to me. Plus, I've got some very good people around me giving me advice and whatever. So I always wanted to go down that line eventually, but probably didn't think it would be this year. But listen, I'm not complaining at the moment.
Yeah, was that important to get Eddie in with you, you know, someone that has that bit of experience just to maybe guide you in areas until you have that yourself?
I think so, yeah. And he's a young guy as well. He's he only finished playing himself a few years ago. And I suppose the Lohan brothers, Stephen and Jerry, and Eddie, they're steeped in football down here in Roscommon. Like they've all played the game at intercounty level, all forwards, and I suppose like myself, they like to try and play the game as quickly and use the kick pass as much as we can. So we were chatting to Eddie before we got the job. He was sort of on the same hymn sheet as me, that we wanted the game played more or less the same way, and it has worked very well so far as the year is going on. We're probably getting that little bit better, but that was a really key thing, that the two of us were on the same hymn sheet, and it has been no hassle at all or no problems all year, and everything has worked fairly well so far.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that I would have associated that style with St. Bridget's when you won the All-Ireland and when you were winning Connacht titles. Did you move away from that a little bit under Paddy Carr? Is that what happened?
Probably didn't. We probably did and we didn't. We probably got a little bit more defensive moving the ball through the hand. But I suppose, Wooly, the way the game has gone since 2013 that we won the All-Ireland, the football has totally changed. The one-on-one battles in your forward, like your forwards used to have, that day is almost dead. You're taking on 3, 4, 5 defenders. So that's the problem. If you cannot move the ball quickly and with the foot pass, especially coming out of your defence, if you turn over a team, you've no real choice but to really hand pass the ball up the field. But the way teams are just dropping back and sitting inside their 55-yard line, it's. If you do start kick passing it, like we did 2 or 3 times against Aughawillan, sure, you're just giving the ball straight back to that position. So, listen, that's the way the game has gone. It's not nice. I don't like playing in him myself. I actually hate playing against certain teams, because you know you're not going to get a lot of the ball, and that's just the way football is. And the sooner that changes, the better. If someone can come up with a plan to beat us, it'd be great.
Yeah, it's not a game for corner forwards anymore.
Definitely not, Wooly. The corner forwards days are gone. Surely you've seen James O'Donoghue a few years ago in the All-Ireland final. He played more or less the game in his own defence and out around midfield. But the one-on-one battle you'd have with the corner backs a few years ago, or the full backs, that day is almost a goner, which is a pity, because you know and I know when we used to play, probably in the good old days, football was, I think it was a lot more enjoyable to play, and it was probably a lot more better to go and watch the matches. Like I love going and watching Colin Cooper's, the Brogans, the Connollys, but at the moment it's very hard to go and justify paying 50 or 80 euro or whatever it is into Croke Park to watch 3 or 4 defenders batter the heads of these players, and a lot of the skill has gone out of it as well.
Yeah, and we have you have attacking corner backs as well, which would break your heart as well, which I'm glad they weren't around when I was playing.
Well, Wooly, I wasn't the most mobile myself when I was playing in the county. I'm probably fitter now than I was when I was playing in the county, but thankfully back then the corner backs was more or less told to stay on the corner forward and just batter the lugs of him and just put him off his game. And probably back then the corner backs, you'd hardly ever see them kicking the ball. It was just hand passing the ball. So thankfully back when I was there, that was it. Listen, you had your one-on-one battle, and whoever came off best, you'd shake hands with the man at the end of the day. But you knew you were in a game, because the way the game is now, Wooly, it's practically non-contact a lot of the time. Back in our day, I suppose you could get away with a lot of stuff off the ball and on the ball as well.
Yeah, exactly. What's your management style like, Frankie?
In what way?
Like, do you run a tight ship? Are you strict?
Come on, Wooly. No, I wouldn't be strict. Listen, Wooly, we've had our weekends away and the whole lot of that, and that's important. In my opinion, that's important, to go for your nights away, bonding, whatever you want to call it, with the team, away from football totally. You don't. We've went away 2 or 3 times already this year. A lot of the time there has to be football. We do different activities, and you'd have a bit of grub after and a few beers, and it's a good way of getting to know younger lads as well, because we brought in 8 or 9 younger guys into the panel this year who wouldn't have been involved at all. So that's important, to get to know these younger lads, and I think the best way to know these young lads is get them on a night out, have a few beers and a bit of a crack, and you know, that's important in my point of view.
Yeah, I think most people would agree with that. Tell us about the county final, Frankie. You brought yourself on towards the end, got in a bit of a scuffle.
Yeah. Well, Eddie brought me on. I didn't want to go on Woolly. I wasn't even warmed up, so I was running the line. I was trying to keep an eye on Cake to keep manners on him. That was a hard job.
Was there any crack with Cake?
Ah, listen, Woolly, it was harmless stuff. It was only a bit of pulling and dragging. There was nothing done major. Two of us fell on the ground and we were holding each other by the jersey. It was just Mickey Mouse stuff, to be honest. These things happen. A lot worse have happened in pitches than you wouldn't hear anything about. It was just because probably my name, it'd make it a big deal about. But listen, it's no big deal. I know the fella that I actually trained the guy that the two of us were scrapping with, Ronan Daly. He's a good lad from Pierce's. I trained him with the County Under-21s there the last few years. So we had a bit of a laugh after. And I was chatting his brother yesterday and passing O'Heal. It's just water under the bridge. Nothing major at all.
And come here, any crack with Shea or with Cake on the sideline?
There was a bit. Did you not hear him? I said to Eddie at one stage, I think I'm going to have to get earplugs. Because Cake, he was running up and down the line and he was just the usual. He was roaring and shouting. He was roaring and shouting at us. He was roaring and shouting at everyone. But had a good chat with Cake after, and he's done a very good job with Pierce. He's unlucky. He's been in two county finals, and unfortunately for him and Pierce, that they have been beaten in both of them. But he's done an excellent job with that Pierce's team, and I've no doubt he'd probably stay with them again next year, and he'll go again. I've no doubt, knowing Cake.
Was it a bit weird, you know, being in opposition against him on the sideline?
It wasn't really, Woolly. Like, we've already played him a couple of times this year. So, we all know Cake was going to go into management. Knowing Cake, he'll be in management every year until he's about 80 years of age, because that's just Cake. He loves being on the go. He loves being kept busy. He loves his football. He's very passionate. So I knew myself, over the years, I'd be chatting to Cake after games and chatting to him. He's always going to get involved. And somewhere down the line, you were going to meet him, whether it was going to be this year or 10 years' time. But thankfully, we've got that out of the way now, so we can concentrate on ourselves from now on.
What about Cara Finn, Frankie? You mentioned about them earlier on. You know, a really good team, but a footballing team, and they're not going to be dropping too many men back.
No, well, the way they played against Castlebar, I've watched it now. They play similar to ourselves in a way. Listen, they're a very experienced team, Woolly. They won the All-Ireland there, in 2015. They've experience all over the field. They'll probably beat a lot of inter-county teams with the type of player they have. Very strong in defence, very physical, very mobile midfield, and Dahi Burke and Ronan Steed, very, very good midfield. Michael Lundy is back with them. Ian Burke was man of the match the last day. Jason Leonard playing well. Farrher kicked 2 points. Dylan Wall is he's a good 11, and I think Martin Farrher might even be back for the final. So, listen, we've come up against them there twice over the last 10 years. We haven't played them an awful lot, so but I think it's going to be very tough for us, Woolly. We've a lot of debutants brought into it this year, and some of them are playing, so it's going to be a huge step up for some of our players. So whether they're able to grasp that chance and take it on, or will it take them another couple of years to really get up to that pitch where we want them to be, they're still very young. So but Sunday will tell the tale, and we'll know after Sunday where we're really fixed.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, best of luck with it, Frankie. Thanks for taking the call.
All right, Woolly. Cheers.
AIB, back in club and county.
Okay, up next, we'll look ahead to this weekend's club action.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera showed it didn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out 30, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
Fort Minor, MC Noda. Can I just say, every single week I have to sit here and listen to Tipperary manager Liam Cairns put me in my place. Derry were unlucky. Do you remember that game?
I think I do actually remember that game, and I'd definitely be siding with Liam Curran. 100%.
All I'm saying, we were very unlucky. We would have beaten Mayo in the semi-final as well. Might have struggled against Dublin, but we would have brought it into a dogfight in the final, and then, of course, Jarrett Burns would have cried about it, and then we would get a new role next year. Anyway, so we're going to talk about the fixtures coming up this weekend. Some crackers. It's a lot of finals taking place. Well, we've got the Leinster Club football semi-finals. Sean O'Mahony's of Louth are playing Road of Offaly. That's in Drogheda at 2 p.m. Mullen Alacta of Longford are playing St Vincent's of Dublin. And is that Longford at 2 p.m. Jim McConnelly? Can we talk about Jim McConnelly for a while?
If you want.
He's going to be playing for St Vincent's this weekend.
So half an hour on Jim McConnelly, yeah. Then. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
No, he's a great fella. But we'll move on. Munster Club Final, Dr Crooks against the Nair of Waterford. That's in Mallow in Cork at 3:30 p.m. Before that, you've got the Munster Club Intermediate Final. Adair of Limerick against Ken Mayer of Kerry at 1:30 p.m. But did you see Colin Cooper's goal 2 weeks ago?
I did, yeah. Amazing.
What a class act.
Amazing.
Like, I actually have him ahead of Jamie Connolly in beautiful footballer sticks.
The great thing about Gooch goals, and I've seen more of these type of goals at club level than I actually have for Kerry, is that he rarely ever... I know this one went into the top corner, but yeah. He's such a brilliant finisher. He makes it look so easy.
Delicious.
It's like he's giving the keeper the eyes or something like that, you know? And they all like just placed beautifully in the corner with the just nonchalant. Yeah. It's great. I could go on all day.
I always say Colin Cooper doesn't sweat. Talent just drips off him. It's too much of it. It's overflowing.
Great line.
Ulster Club Final, Slochneil of Derry going for the treble. They've already won the Camogie and the Hurling. They're playing Kilcoo of Down in Armagh. And the... Oh, sorry. Connacht, how could I forget? The Connacht Final, Senior Final, St Bridget's against Corrifin at 2 p.m. Ah, which game are you most interested in, Connor?
Definitely Bridget's Corrifin.
Yeah.
And not only because it's Connacht, whatever, but like say what you like about Connacht, and plenty has been said about the Connacht Intercounty Championship, whatever, but... like a club level, it's the quality is outrageous. I mean, just like Corrifin and Bridget's, both have won it in the last 5 years. Bridget's were in the final, they lost to Castlemaglen. Castlebar in the final last year. Corrifin took extra time to beat Castlebar a couple of weekends ago. Castlebar beat Corrifin in a classic, while Stephen Rochford was still managing them last year. I mean, the quality, some of these games are like absolutely epic. Like these two, like I know this is true of many clubs throughout the country, whatever, but these clubs, when at the start of the year, their focus is on Ireland. Obviously they have to win a county to get there, but it's definitely the ultimate goal. But this weekend, like, tuned into Corrifin against Castlebar, like Corrifin are going to be hard bet. They were hard bet last year, but they were coming on off the back of an All-Ireland. It's hard to keep that going, but they just seem to have that bite back, and like some of their players, and like Gary Sykes and Micheál Lundy up front, Dahi Burke who hurls for Galway, Ian Burke, just so strong, so solid throughout.
They look so sharp. So fast everywhere.
Yeah. They still play lovely. Like they were hailed for the brand of football they played under Rochford. And everyone's like, oh, Rochford's going to have Mayo playing that brand of football. And he tried to eventually. I think we eventually got there. But yeah, they play such a lovely, lovely brand of football. But like Bridget's as well. Like Bridget's are... Like they haven't gone away. I suppose they were forgotten about last year to an extent, because they didn't. It was Castlebar, Corrifin that were dominating Connacht. But these guys are class as well. Up front, like Senegal Bride, Inkle Bride, the Dolans. I can't wait for this one. It's gonna be a cracker.
Tell us, obviously, the intermediate final wrapped up on Sunday. Westport won. They beat the Leitrim champions.
Ballinmore, Sean Heslins, I think.
They beat you, Kilsima, in the Mayo final. Lee Keegan, what is he like as an intermediate club footballer?
He's brilliant.
The dragon shirts off, boys.
If he has to. Yeah. I mean, the first game he played, I remember going to see Westport in the quarterfinal. We'd got through our quarterfinal already, so we're just, scouting out potential opposition. Yeah. And I was in the crowd, and it was his first game back after the
All Ireland final. Taking pictures of yourself to show that you're scouting.
Yeah. So he was given the week off. Westport had a championship game the weekend after the replay. He was given that week off. And then he played in the quarterfinal. And you're just listening to people talking in the crowd at halftime, and obviously the county player is the sole focus of much of the talk. Like, geez, Keegan doesn't do much. And I was like, am I watching the same game here? Like, you know, it's just like he was playing midfield. He was being properly man marked at midfield. Not as midfielders normally mark each other. Just everything he did was just had a touch class about it, you know. Obviously, he got ridiculous pace, but he's a really good kick passer as well. And I think he definitely set up the winning goal in that game. And against us then, again, just... he probably wasn't Westport's standout player, but like really influential. And like I tell you, he hit one of our guys a belt. It was just late, like a little, you know, a little bit late though. I don't think there was any malice, but he's probably still feeling it. Like I was about 20 yards away and I could hear it. Like, you know, he's so strong up front, up close as well. So yeah, he's a really good, like Westport are a really good team. They just come down from senior 2 years ago, and they're as physically strong as most senior teams, definitely that I played against this year would be. They're not scoring a lot. They did say, like as I said, they should have beaten us by way more. They only scored 10 points against us. They only scored 1-9 against the Leitrim champions there at the weekend. But you know, they definitely have aspirations. The problems the Mayo teams have had in recent years is cool playing part. Kerry teams in finals. But Westport play the winners of the Munster Intermediate final in the semi final. So if they do lose in the final this year, it won't be to a Kerry team. So they have a serious chance.
All right, full weekend of great action there, so get out and watch some of them. I think that's everything. I don't think we ballsed up too much, did we, in Willie's absence?
Hopefully not.
Do you think he'll be annoyed that we give him a little bit of a ribbon at start?
No, I'd say it'd be all right. Like, as long as he didn't go on about Jeremy Connolly for half an hour.
No, we've got a pile of Dubliners in the studio here now as well, just to greet us, so we're going to go chat to them. Thanks to everyone who put the show together. Thanks to Willie for making life easy and getting those two great interviews. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, sportsshow_GAA, and subscribe to the GAA Hour on iTunes, and you can do that in SoundCloud as well. See you next week, but in the words of Peter Canavan, I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.